Blog Talk Radio.
Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few. I hope, indeed I pray, that we shall not be found unworthy of our victory if after toil and tribulation it is granted to us. For the rest, we have to gain the victory. That is our task. Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duties, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
We shall not fail or falter, we shall not weaken or tire. Neither the sudden shock of battle nor the long-drawn trials of vigilance and exertion will wear us down. Give us the tools, and we will finish the job.
We shall go on to the end. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
This is called England Belongs to Me.
But now I'm falling.
Eagles. All your work. Now in New York. And it's the song I'd like to dedicate to my football team.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I've got to thank our very own Red Fox blogger for stepping in. I had an emergency, just as I was about to call in on for the show this evening. So I was panicking, but thank goodness. Yes, it's not the opening that the East Anglians normally used to, but Kel was thinking on the toes. God bless you, Kel, for being there. I was just all of a panic, and well, we're here now, and so yeah, we always say we like to do things a little bit different on the East Anglian ZDL radio show, and it's quite obvious tonight we've chosen one of those times to open up totally different, about 5 minutes late, ladies and gentlemen. My apologies to all my listeners out there and anybody that's in the chat room, because I haven't even had a chance to check in the chat room at this moment in time. But Kel, thank you so much for being there, being basically, you knew there was a problem, otherwise, because you know I'm normally there about 8:15, I'm normally there around about that time, but as I say, I had issues this evening. So once again, thank you, Kel.
My pleasure, Jeff.
Oh my
God. People are going to wonder why East Anglia and EDO radio show is kissing all the boys.
But no, as I say, sometimes these things are sent to tryers, and especially just about to do a show, and I find my electric goes out on me. Oh my God! And I couldn't find the key. You know, I've got an electric key, and I couldn't find that. So I was falling out of knocking everything flying. I was panicking.
That's okay. We're all here for you. Tim is here for you as well.
Oh, Tim. Oh,
yep. Hiya, Jeff.
Thank you.
Hiya, Jeff.
Yeah,
wondering what had happened to you.
Just after you called me, I had all sorts of problems. I was trying to have sound, and then so the electric went out. I was preparing for the show, and I couldn't find the key. And as I say, I knew the time was ticking by, but I couldn't see what the bloody time was. But thank goodness... we got a lot of great people out there. I'm thinking of Kel and other good people that put things together. And, yes, we may be a little bit late, but it's worth it, you know, because we normally have a great show, don't we, Tim?
Indeed,
and
we do.
We certainly do. And I know that you've been a very busy man today as well, haven't you?
I'm trying to rival Tommy with his superstar status. I haven't quite managed to get there yet. In all seriousness, I had an interview today with ABC News America, and a very nice young lady called Jacqueline Jesko phoned me up, sorry about that. It's just one of these pop-up ads again. Jacqueline Jesko phoned up, and we had a conversation which lasted about 3/4 of an hour. She's hopefully going to take away something positive and informative to go with her documentary. She's putting a documentary together. I don't really know what sort of what form it will take, but I did ask her to let me know when it all happens, and she said she might well get back to me if she needs any further information. So it's all good. And
anything comes up,
you know. Well, yes, absolutely. All publicity.
I'd like to listen to, because I do know that there is a format being made. It'd be nice to listen to how it proceeded, you know, the interviews. I think you're not being funny, Tim. I think you're quite accomplished to answer any questions on our behalf anyway, so I think it probably went quite well. By the sounds of it, what you said, it seemed quite positive-like, you know. So,
well, I certainly don't think in its raw format there's any problem at all. You never know how... news outlets are going to edit interviews like that, and what's
going
to end up on the cutting room floor and what's likely to be broadcast are going to be two different things. But nevertheless, I think in its raw format, it was it put the EDL in a very good light. I mean, I'll obviously you will have the opportunity to listen to that, as will all the regional organisers and the division leaders and so on. And you,
well, well done, Tim, for doing that interview. It was it's appreciated that you stood up to the front there and done the interview. So, well done.
Hang on a second. I'm running into trouble here with this... These pop-ups. Just one moment. I'll be back with you in just a moment. I'm just going to mute you for a moment. Okay.
No problem, Tim. And I noticed we've also got, and I always got to mention Sue from New Mexico. Sue, it's always a pleasure to see you in the studio on your phone, listening in on your phone. It is really appreciated, isn't it, Kel? You know, because I know she loves the shows and she loves what the EDL does. So, once again, Sue, thank you for all the tireless work that you do in all the endeavours that you do. It's really, really, really appreciated. Like, so, there you go. So, yeah, you there, Kel?
I am here.
No, oh. I was just like, it was silence.
No, I had to run out of the room. Brandy was up to something, and I had to go check on her. She's not doing very well these days, so I'm keeping a closer eye on her more so than usual. But I did catch what you had to say about our Sue, and I could not agree with you about that more. Sue works so hard for so many radio programs out there. It's a lot of people that listen to our programs because of her tireless works behind the scenes, and she's a bit of an unsung hero, so I can
totally agree with you. And we got a lot of people like Sue, you know, listening on other devices, and so it's a big thank you to all of our listeners who do listen in, who tune in every week to the shows, what we do, so it's... a big thumbs up to them and thanking them. I've just managed to open up the chat room, Kel. I see we've got... I'm getting what Tim's getting there, these little pop-up things. You get them as well, don't you, Kel? And it's so tiresome. You know, I'm going to have to get a pop-up block or something like that because it becomes tedious. You know what I mean, ladies and gentlemen? These pop-ups, all of a sudden, you know, we're trying to do a show and all of a sudden a pop-up pops up in the middle of your screen. You think, I don't want to, I'm not interested in pop-ups. I want to get on with and do the show. So there you go. Kel, I've got to thank you for stepping in tonight. I've got to thank you.
You better believe it. And just to let you know that I logged out as host and I am now chatting as co-host. So I'm glad that you're back at the helm.
That's all good to me.
Yay. I'm just glad you're back.
I'm glad I'm back. I was panicked. And of course, it was getting myself in the right tsunami. If you know, Kel, I mean, anybody knows I tend to panic a little bit, especially when I know that a show's gone live on me, and you know, and it was out of my hands to actually get into the studio and do what we normally do. But
can you hear me, guys? By the way,
sorry, Tim.
Oh, sorry, it's these bloody pop-ups. I'm trying to get them I'm having... I'll tell you what I'm going to do.
You can get pop-up blockers, can't you, Kel? You can get pop-up blocker things.
Oh, this is terrible. I'm going to have to completely shut down and restart. This is getting silly. I'll be back in 5 minutes, guys. I'm sorry about this.
Okay, Tim. No problems. No problems. I know it's very tiresome. I've got to also say hello to British News, our army. We got COG. I think you've been here before, Sergio, but it's good to see you in the chat when we got a few guests, and we got Paul Alexander. It's always a pleasure to see you, Paul. I hope you're well. And we got Politics 12. Good to see you too. And of course, none but the least, we got our very own Poppy, who works tirelessly in the background doing the things that she does. So it's good to see you in the chat room, because I couldn't get in there first of all. When I clicked the button, it wouldn't do nothing to me. So so it was a bit difficult just when I first came into the studio. But it seems everything's back running now. And one thing that we got to talk about is for next week. Ladies and gentlemen, next week we've got the Exeter demonstration. So this is what we'll be talking about. Make sure if you're going to Exeter. I do know how Tommy English is going, and it's a fair old trek from Tommy, from one side of the country to the other. I thank him for all his what he does. He travels. He's a bit of a journeyman. He goes everywhere where we have demonstrations, and so does many, many other great patriots that we've got within this country. But also, next Thursday, we've got the chairman of the committee of the EDL, Mr. Tim Ablett, will be appearing next Thursday. So I'm looking forward to welcoming Tim onto the show, to the East Anglians radio show, and to hear his views. And maybe if anybody wants to call in on that evening, please do. When you call in, could you make the questions a bit short and sweet, if you know what I mean? Because we don't know how many people might be waiting in the line. You know, it might be quite busy. So that's all a little bit of a heads up. Like, you know, just keep it sort of a minute or two, because if there's other people wants to talk to Tim about the aspects of the EDL, so we'll do that. I think we've got very own Tim back.
Can you hear me, guys? Can you hear me now?
Yes, got you.
Okay,
right,
that's good. Okay, well, I had to shut down my web browser. I've no idea what was going on. I had about three pop-ups coming up at the same time, and I've shut down the whole thing. So I've only got my Skype open at the moment, and I can't actually see the chat room. So if anybody puts anything in the chat room, I personally won't be able to see it. But I'm sure if it's important, Jeff or Kel can relay it. And then if anybody's got any queries, hopefully I'll be able to answer them. But it's just a little bit of news. I'm sorry about that.
No, these things do happen. As I say, it's very frustrating when you get pop-ups popping up all over the place, and that especially when you just come onto the show and there's things you want to talk about. It throws you off of your your mind what you're thinking, isn't it? It does,
well,
doesn't
yes,
it?
I don't need any encouragement to get thrown off my thread, as I'm sure know by now.
But Tim, I was going to say, before we continue with the show this evening, we've also got Mr. Michael Green, who's calling in. So let's welcome Michael to the panel. Ladies and gentlemen, you're probably getting used to Mr. Michael Green. He's got so much to say, and we love having him in the studio and on our panel. So let me bring Michael in right now. Michael, you're live on the East Anglians Radio Show. Go ahead, brother. Good to see you. Good to hear you.
Hey, Jeff and Tim. And
hello there, Mike. How are you doing?
Excuse me, let me just clear my throat. And I know Kel is there, so hello to all of you great patriots and great warriors in the battle against the Islamist fascism that is spreading this globe.
Well, yes, indeed. And we all need reminding of that from time to time. But I think we're at least in with a fighting chance with what we have within the EDL and the rest of the counter-jihad movement. So all is not lost by any means.
No, not by a long way. We're still on a, when we talk about organisations, if you think about it, we haven't been only around a very short time, 4.5 years, where an organisation like we're concerned. It's a very small matter of time that we've been around. But look what we've achieved in that time, though, guys. You know, global defence leagues right the way around the globe, from a few people making a stand to seeing the world come together once again when there is a threat against it. It's been an amazing journey. It's been said before, it's a phenomenon. No one ever believed that the EDL would be, you know, come and be here as long as it was going to be. Because a lot of them at the time, especially the police, the MPs and things like that, they'd only be around for about 6 months. Yeah, right. And we're still here. We're going strong. We've woke a lot of people up out there. Yes, there's still people waking up. Know that there is issues around where they live, thinking what's going on, why are not the politicians doing things? And now they realise what we've been talking about is the reason behind it. Now they can see for themselves that certain things that happens that really puts things into a perspective, and that is what we've got before us now. And we're not, you know, no matter what they think, anybody thinks, we will continue to move forward. Because, you know, if we don't, if things was to stay as they were, say, 4.5 years ago, this country would be in a right old state. But it seems like since we've been there, you know, they might not say they don't want to talk to us, the EDL, but things happening, isn't they? Have you noticed that, Tim? Things have been happening.
Well,
slowly but sure.
Indeed. And I was commenting on this very thing with the lady from ABC News America, Jacqueline Jesko, earlier today. And she was saying, you know, is there still a need for something like a street protest group like the EDL? And I said, well, you have to remember that 4 years ago, that was pretty much the only course of action that was open to groups that were dissatisfied with the performance of the government and the inability to respond to what is quickly becoming a national security threat, combined with the complicity of the mainstream media. And under those circumstances, if you're not going to get anywhere by writing a letter to your local newspaper, because it'll be just chucked in the bin. So street protest was really the only way forward. But since then, we've got so much more in the way of online assistance. And I'm not just talking about the internet with the websites and the blogs that you can go to for information. If you want to know a little bit more or a lot more about Islam, it's all there. Everything you need to know is there and available at the touch of a button. We also have the social media sites such as Facebook, Twitter, and of course Blog Talk Radio. And we can, once we've understood ourselves how serious the threat is, we can disseminate that information around the world in a heartbeat. And the message of the EDL has resonated in such a way in every Western country that has a growing substantial Muslim population and that is experiencing the same problems that we are. Now, that's something that our forebears never had when they were encountered with something like a national security threat on this scale. The ability to disseminate the information around the world in a heartbeat just did not exist. And that's what makes me so encouraged. I know I repeat this, but it bears repeating. It is definitely worth repeating that we have everything going for us. And although the governments around the world and the mainstream media may not like the message of the EDL, it's not going to go away because we deal in reality. We are the ones that are speaking the truth in the face of disinformation and deceit by our governments and by our mainstream media. And that is why. That is why we are going to prevail.
Yes. I would echo that sentiment there, Tim. That statement you made there is exactly the way I feel. We will continue to speak the truth. You know, that is it. And we can't do no more than speak the truth. When we speak the truth, you can't go wrong. No matter what they try to throw, you know, aspersions at you, you're this, you're that. Well, guess what? The truth will always prevail either the misinformation, what we get from the governments and from the media, the state-run media, etc. I mean, and that is what we see. You know, people, I've woken up and can see that what we've been saying right from the beginning, when we first started, that this is, you know, we're a street movement, we've always been... It comes down to we are a human rights organisation. We was formed under that. We are registered as a human rights organisation. And once Sir Kevin Cavill was being, I think the police was arresting him or something like that, they was doing, and they said, well, who are you? He said, well, we're the EDL, but we really are a human rights organisation. And that is the case. And that is something that needs to be echoed out there, that, you know, we do champion everybody, you know, women's cause. I mean, you see the way that women are treated in Islam. You can see the way that children are abused under the under Islam. You can see the way that homosexuals are strung up for you know, being who they are, because they're different from, you know, the normal set of people would be, what they expect. But that's what we stand for. We stand for human rights. And that's what we're here for, you know. And we continue to do it. You know, we'll continue champion the things that needs to be really put out there. And those things are so important to myself, so important to people like Tim, Kel, and all of us that are part of the our organisation. Is this is the reason why we're here also, and we mustn't forget, is for the future. The future is paramount for the future generations, and we want to think that what we leave them, the future generations, is a safer world. We don't want to bid them to be left with revolution and what you see like going on in Syria and places like that. Well, we don't want to see towns and cities in rubble, continuous fighting everywhere. We want to see peace and tranquility for our future generations. That's what we're all of it are here for, isn't it, Tim?
Well, yeah, and it's worth bearing in mind the maxim that the price of peace is eternal vigilance. Now, I forget who said that, but it's never been more true than it is today. And, yes, you're absolutely right. We do have the truth on our side, but we must make sure that the sound of that truth is not drowned out by the tide of disinformation and deceit that is currently coming from the mainstream media and from our political elites and our governments. And I'm not talking just about in this country, but around the world. There is a campaign to silence the truth, and we have to be ever more vigilant at every opportunity.
I think you've got
gentlemen,
things like the OIC trying to silence freedom of speech and trying to shut up talking about Islam and class it as a hatred thing to speak out against Islam. Well, you know what? They'll have to put me in prison, because I will continue. I've been speaking about Islam for a long time, and I'm not going to stop now, because I know what Islam is all about. I know what the future holds if this country becomes an Islamic country. I know what it holds for peace, freedom. Then things will be something of the past, something in the dark, murky past. That is why we're here. This is why we continue to fight what we've been doing, and this is the only way forward. And we are making insteps, but great big insteps globally. People really are woken up to what we've been doing and saying, you know. And
yes.
So no, I'm going on the tangent
right.
there.
Sorry, I think Michael was just about to come in with something there, Michael.
Yes. First, I'd like to share with everyone here and the listeners a very powerful statement made by a well-known British gentleman named John Stuart Mill, who is in England in the 19th century. And he said very appropriately, and this is absolutely fits perfectly with the things you gentlemen have said and with the whole battle against this dark evil. He said, a man who has nothing for which he's willing to fight, nothing which is more important than his own personal safety, is a miserable creature. He has no chance of being free unless made and kept so by the exertions of men better than himself. If we're not willing to stand up and fight today, and this means people, as you say, globally, it's the UK, the United States, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, the Netherlands, France, Germany, all of the free Western civilized world. There's an onslaught, of course, of Islamic fascism that has inundated these nations, some much worse than others, the UK being, I would say, the foremost battleground at this time for the things that you people are experiencing there, that this is the time that people need to stand up and they need to participate in some way, whatever contribution that someone thinks they could make to this vital cause, because everything that we hold dear, our freedoms, our liberty, our way of life, our Judeo-Christian values and principles are at stake. They're threatened, and, you know, we all know this. So we hope it's not going to become a physical battle, you know. I mean, there is a physical war, and there are people who wear the uniform of our military that have been on the battlefield and are still on that battlefield. Within our nations, we've seen violent acts of depraved terrorism where people have been maimed, limbs blown off, and, of course, they've been killed in the U.S., in the U.K., other nations, in Spain, all throughout Europe. We've seen Muslim fascists make weapons, bombs, and whatnot to kill and slaughter innocent humans. But as you said, if this thing is not dealt with in one way, down the road, whenever that's going to be, years down the road, it will become a physical fight. Because I, for one, will never back down. I will stand and fight before I get on my knees. I will never submit to this dark, backward barbarism. And that's what it is. It's not a religion. It's a totalitarian ideology that seeks to oppress and enslave people. So that's the message that we want to send. And I know we all going to send that message. We're going to use our First Amendment rights, our liberties, our freedoms, to speak the truth. And as you said, Tim, so appropriately, that look, the mainstream media is not putting forth the truth. If anything, there's a whitewash campaign to deceive and give misinformation to the masses about Islam and Islamic fascism. So while we have the breath of life, if we're alive and we're breathing and we can speak out and take lawful action, we always have to say lawful action, we will do that.
Yep, absolutely.
What can I say? You said it elegantly, and I think we was hanging on every word that you were saying there, Michael.
Quite right.
So important that sort of message reverberates across the globe.
Yeah, I'd like to add one quick point that many people, many of us as civilians, have not seen war. Now, I've never been on the battlefield. My father was. And I've been blessed and very fortunate to be involved with a lot of badly wounded service members in the U.S. And all you have to do is turn on a TV, or there's plenty of documentaries, and you see what these people do. You see the depraved acts of violence that they perpetrate on other human beings. And that resonates within you. It struck a chord in me 5 years ago when I went to my first military hospital in the U.S., and Britain has made a tremendous contribution. So many brave British service members, you know, have given their life on the battlefield. They've come back maimed, wounded, missing limbs, post-traumatic stress. All the things that people become afflicted with, you know, from being in a physical war. So for me, personally, that had a very powerful effect on my life, and it made me more determined to want to be involved in this cause, to battle against this this barbaric ideology.
Very well, what can I say about that? Well said. I'd just like to welcome just a couple of people into the into the chat room. I'll just see. We've got our very own Vito Espirito, Mamma Mia No Sharia, with the radio, the part of the Radio Jihad Network, who has seven shows a week, great shows. And we've got also Eric Kyle. I've just thought I'd say hello to Eric. He's one of our regular listeners and in the chat room as well. And I'm seeing for a little while, we've got our very own Dodgy Dave back. So it's good to see you once again, Dodgy. And I just see someone else coming, Mike the Mechanic. Great name. Welcome, Mike. So there you go. I thought I'd just mention a few people that just come into the chat room. And I did mention COG as well. So I hope I've... I think I've fit everybody else in there. So there you go. But once again, it's great to have you on the show this evening, Michael, part of our panel, with Tim and with Kel as well. So it's some interesting issues that we're discussing. But I was going to say, if we just take a little break, just for a couple of minutes. So I just need to, because all that rushing about, I haven't had time to have a little drink of tea, and my throat is so dry. As I said, I couldn't find my electric key, and it was just total pandemonium here, you know. Running around like a chicken without a head. It was unbelievable. But anyway, guys, I was to say, if we could take maybe just a short break, we're going to play something that we normally play at the beginning of the show, but we'll play it now anyway, because I do love this. This is, of course, what we say. Join the EDL. Be a part of a great organisation, a great street movement, as we are a great pressure group. So with that, here's the tune. Wrong one. Whoops, wrong one. What am I like? I play. Stop giggling, Kel.
I'm sorry, Jeff. I totally messed up the beginning of this show. So I think it's poetic justice or something.
I'm taking a note, Jeff. We're not having this. Bringing the EDL in.
Take his name.
Oh, no. You know what's going to happen. We know what our Kel's like. She's going to blooper it.
Cleaning out the latrines for the next week.
Blooper
no,
reel 2013
this
coming
will be
up, folks.
Part of the blooper reels. I guarantee you, Tim. I know Kel.
No excuses. Give me 20 push-ups, Kel, right now. Come on.
With one hand
anyway,
tied behind my back, Tim.
But anyway, guys, what I was going to say is that I've actually got my finger on the right button this time, Kel. So let's play the tune. She's giggling away. Can you hear her giggling?
Yeah, it's terrible. She's awful. I'm taking her name twice.
Take her name twice.
What do you press up?
I'll see you in the office after the show, young lady.
For the next
minute. To the toilet. Okay. Break.
Okay, right. So, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back after this short break. So, Tim, Kel, grab your tea, your coffee, whatever, and we'll be back after this.
Tried to change my country, you tried to change my life. No one ever asked me if I thought that this was right. It's time for us to tell you that we will go through hell to defend our country and to help the EDL. I'm proud to be an Englishman and I'm going to be free. I won't forget the men who died to get that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. Goodbye. save England and the UK. You have lied to all the people and tried to take away their rights. But we won't let you sell this land, not without a fight. It's time for us to tell you that you can go to hell. It's time for us to stand and fight and join the EDL. I'm proud to be an Englishman and I'm going to be free. I won't forget the men who died to give that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. So save England and the UK. Forget the men who died to get that right to me. And we will stand up against you and defend England every day. There's no doubt we love this land. So save England and the UK.
Certainly do. I just love that tune. It just puts everything in the perspective, doesn't it? You know. So anyway, I've had a quick trim, Katina. As you can hear, my voice is clear as a bell once again, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, good to hear those dulcet tones once again.
Yes, no, certainly. Because I just made me tea just that I was trying to come into studio. I didn't get a chance to have a drink of this. I thought we'll have a little break. But we're going to discuss a few things tonight. Something that Kel, I was talking to Kel yesterday. Was it today, Kel? About that video that was made in May. I think it's about May the 15th. And we've got it in the studio, haven't we, Kel? That with that imam.
The imam that was talking about David Cameron and Queen Elizabeth.
Let's see where it is, Kel. Did you upload it into the studio here?
I think I did, and let me take a looky here, see if I can find it.
Yes, please.
Amongst the 800 items.
We did have a...
Yeah, it was listed on Bare Naked Islam, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And the message that was accompanying it was, you know, we do all this, we invite them into our country, we give them all these things, and this is the thanks we get. And it's some bearded character explaining to his Muslim brothers how Islam is going to take over and how these all the things they're going to do when Islam takes over. And really, you just want to
grab it by the throat,
actually. But maybe as it's as there are children listening, I'm sure by the beard is probably better.
yes, it's more healthier.
Yeah, that's right. Much healthier option. I like the healthy options.
But
I'll tell you what, you guys speak amongst yourselves, and Jeff, give me a couple of minutes so I can bring it up proper.
Okay, thank you, Kel. Yeah, I just say,
no problem.
We was talking, didn't we, Kel? We was talking about it before, wasn't we? And that's what we was going to be talking about for the show this tonight. So it was made around about May the 15th, I think it was, Tim, wasn't it? Something like that.
I'm not sure of the exact date.
I saw that video.
I was trying to find out who it was, and his voice seemed very familiar, but I couldn't place it, and I haven't been able to find out who it was. But
I can get you that information.
Oh, sorry, Michael. What was that?
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that wonderful video the other night, And I wanted to reach through my computer and strangle him, but, you know, it just didn't go that way.
Join the queue. Join the queue.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is what gets me, Michael and Tim, is the pure hatred towards the kufar, the infidel, us. The people that have put bread and butter on their table, who's brought them in from some of these war-torn countries, and this is what how they want to repay us, by basically getting rid of the royal family. Kate Middleton, they even talked about, didn't they, on the video?
Well, hatred wasn't the word that jumped out at me. It's the arrogance and the sense of superiority and the feeling of entitlement that he exudes, you know, as if all this was due to him by right because he happened to be a Muslim. And that's the most ridiculous thing, because obviously if there was anybody less entitled to rule the world, the last thing you should let Muslims do is get anywhere near a position of power and authority, because you just know they are going to abuse it. See it all the time when Muslims, through the goodwill of us lowly kuffar, decide to take we take them into our organisations, take them into our country, we give them positions of power in some organizations and our local and national politics and our criminal justice systems and our judiciary, and we frequently see how they abuse it. I mean, we do talk about it from time to time. A corrupt Muslim policeman, the one that leaked Anjem Chowdhury's details to George Galloway, just as an example. That Chief Inspector Ali Desai, who abused his power for months, if not years, before he was finally stopped. In local and national politics, there are numerous instances of corruption, nepotism, and they don't seem to have any shame about it at all.
No,
and
they haven't. They're quite brazen about the way they act, don't they, Tim?
Yes,
you know, this is the thing about it. They're not apologising for who they are and what they intend to do. They're so brazen because the politicians or the politics is so weak in our countries that they think they can do it and get away with it. And most of the time, guess what? They do.
Yep, I
know there was one of these meetings going on, and they was saying kill the kuffar and all. And there was police there as well, and they took no notice. This was at Birmingham. This was that was being broadcast from Birmingham, believe it or not. And there were police amongst them, and they didn't do anything.
Yeah, I think I know the interview you mean, and I'm trying to bring to mind who it was, but there's this one particular guy said the Muslim on this show.
Do you know what, Tim? Because I know I was listening to it. It was live, and it was being was actually someone had managed to get into one of the rooms or something or other and being able to broadcast it out to our thing. So we, listen, this went on for quite a while, and they had different speakers, and they were all saying the same hatred was coming out. So we just let everybody, this is what they're all about, ladies and gentlemen. You know, it's quite obvious. They make no, they don't try to cloud over anything. They say what they want to do. They want to bring about the caliphate to our countries and our nations over our dead bodies, mind you. But this is what they intend to do. And even if they reckon they do it through demographics, they think they won't have to use bullets or guns or anything like that. The demographics are working in their favour, and they just be able to just walk through into power and bring about their caliphate.
This brings to mind a phrase that I heard recently, and it's one that we ought to be discussing at length, I think, when time permits, not necessarily on the show tonight. But the phrase that I had in mind is the soft racism of low expectations. And it was coined by somebody. I'm going to have to go back and Google this to find out who said it originally. But when you have all these people on the left that delight in calling us in the EDL fascists and racists and so on and so on and so on, I mean, we know we're not racists. But when you look at who the real racists are, you could quite easily apply that term to some of the people on the left, because they have a way of looking at people who are not white or not Christian white middle class people, and they look at them and decide that they're going to let them get away with quite a lot of things that they wouldn't let their own sort get away with, because they're not holding them to the same standards, the same level of expectation.
Correct.
And that in itself is a form of racism. And all right, you might say, well, Islam's nothing to do with race, but the concept of holding Muslims to the same standard as ourselves is something that seems to have eluded people on the left of the political spectrum. They seem to think that it's perfectly okay for Muslims to go around threatening people with death for drawing cartoons, saying they're going to introduce the caliphate at every opportunity, have the black flag of Islam flying over Downing Street, and various other treasonous, seditious, criminal or antisocial acts or words or deeds. They seem to think it's perfectly all right, and that is the soft racism of low expectations, to coin this particular phrase. And it's something I think we ought to discuss and bring out in the open for a lot more people to think about, because it's one of the things that allows
something that we are doing now, Tim. We are delving. And we are sort of, you know, expanding upon these issues that we think so important.
I realize,
we do deviate away from maybe some of the topic, but we are still on the same path of expanding on things, like we do with Michael being in the band. We expand on things as well, don't we, Tim?
I realize that part of what we do involves not sweeping under the carpet the actions of the Muslim community. And the obvious thing that springs to mind from recent events is the sexual grooming of young girls by Muslim rape gangs. But there was for a long time, nobody wanted to do anything about it because it would be seen as racist or Islamophobic. And that is what I mean by the soft racism of low expectations. We are not holding Muslims to the standard that we would hold ourselves, and we really should, all the time, every time. And that's the thing that we maybe need to, every time you see a lefty in the street, grab him by the throat and give him a lecture to that effect. I'm looking forward to
it. Or grab him by the beard.
Or grab him by the beard and give him a lecture to that effect. Yeah, that's right. Grab him by his
coat. I was going to say, Tim, because we haven't given the number out to our listeners this evening, but we've been hitting on some very interesting topics this evening. And if any of you want to call in, please do. The number, if you hooked up to Skype, you're a Skype user, and you're a Blog Talk Radio user, if you left click on the Skype button, follow the prompt, and just when it says you want to speak to the host or do you want to just listen, you'll press 1 on your device. But if you're outside of the USA, the number to call in on is 001-858-777-5934. Repeat, 001-858-777-5934. Because we hadn't done that, and we've run nearly an hour into the show. We hadn't done it.
Well, I'm just looking up this quotation that I gave you a little earlier, and it appears that I slightly misquoted it. The phrase is the soft bigotry of low expectations. And that's actually better, because that encompasses racism, fascism, Islamophobia, and all the other things. And apparently it's something to do with George W. Bush. Now, I don't know if it was attributed to him, or if he actually had a comment on it. So I'm just going to see if I can I can dig that up.
Well, the left greatly hated. President Bush was not well liked by the left in America. We know that, and I don't think the Muslims were too fond of him either. But
no. It's definitely one of his phrases, the soft country of expectations. Any enemy of the left is a friend of mine, so. I know George W. Bush wasn't always well regarded, but nevertheless, he had some principles, which I think it would be nice.
No problem. I was late all the day, wasn't I? My electric went out.
That were anything similar, but none of them seemed to.
Put himself on mute, as you called.
No, he had more guts and courage than the spineless cowards today. That's for certain.
Yes, all right. Jeff thinks
but
he's
I,
on mute, and he hasn't, but we'll try and talk over him anyway.
Okay, let me share something with you. It's very brief. It's from an imam in Tennessee. You know, we've discussed the problems in America, too, in Tennessee. Listen to this quote from a Muslim imam in Tennessee in the USA. He said, "Jihad is a means to establish Islam in all lands. Life and property of unbelievers, Christians and Jews, have no value. For it is halal. It is allowed for Muslims to confiscate the property until they declare that there is no God but Allah and that Muhammad is his messenger." So right here in the U.S., we have one of these 7th century barbarians, and he's not shy about it. He's pretty upfront and pretty clear. And this is good, because this is the true face of Islam.
Well, yeah, we have somebody similar, of course, in the UK, our good friend Anjem Chowdhury, of whom I'm sure you have heard. But he is very fond of quoting directly from the Quran and making the intentions of Islam in the UK quite clear. And sometimes I think it's a good thing to have these people here who we can point to and say, this is the real face of Islam. This is what Muslims mean when they come over to Western countries and cause all the problems that they do. They're not doing it just to be spiteful. They're doing it in the name of Allah and the Quran. It's what the Islamic ideology tells them that as good Muslims they must do. They must do everything they can in their power to further the cause of Islam, so that eventually it reigns supreme over the kuffar. And the more exposure we can get to quotations like that, the better. I'm pretty sure I've seen the article you're referring to, but I can't bring the guy's name to mind.
Yeah, well, the thing is, the liberal media, the mainstream media in America, never reported it. Of course, these stories get buried, as you said earlier in the program, you know, the whole whitewashing and deception, and that's to be expected today, and that's why what we do is so important to inform people. But Muslims need to understand that we're not going to lay down and just submit.
Yeah.
And I think that's another important aspect of this whole movement, whether it's the English Defense League or other nations or the United States, that there are scores of people that are not going to be intimidated. The main thing that people like this use, they're thugs, that's all these people are, is intimidation. So they want to intimidate with threats of violence, of death, with acts of violence, brutality, and so forth. But there's plenty of us who aren't going to be intimidated. We're not going to be silent, and we're going to stand up, and we're going to fight.
Yes, well said, Michael. I agree 100%, and that's what so many of us feel, that we will never, ever surrender to these stupid ideas that these people want to put upon us. But I've just had a message. You probably might have heard my phone call, and I had to mute myself. And that was our very own Mr. Tommy English. He just gave me a call to let me know that he's just finished work, and it will be going to shot. Hopefully, he'll be back in time just call in for the
you only thought you muted yourself on that call, Jeff. We managed to
I'm a very, very strict co-host.
I was going to say we did hear part of the call, but we managed to struggle along manfully. So I'm going to just take your name for that, Jeff. And after Kel's finished cleaning out,
I thought I muted it.
Well, no, we didn't actually.
No. I was working on another file, and I was hearing something, and it's like, what's going on? It sounds like Jeff is talking to somebody else, and Tim and Michael are talking, and Jeff is talking to, well, who's there? Well, what's going on there? But just to let you know, Jeff, that no, I did not upload that video into the studio, but I have, and that's what I was doing. That's why I was, on another planet myself, Jeff. But I've got it here right now. It's loaded into the studio, and
whenever you
want me to play it, let me know.
Yes, please. I was going to say, I just wanted to give the little message from Tommy that he'll be going to Shotton tomorrow. As you know, there's a demonstration in Shotton, I think it's near Lancashire. So he'll be going tomorrow. But he said he'll try to get back whatever time he gets home. He's just finished work, just as he called me, just finished work, and he was on his way home. But he did say to tell other people that he said he'll give you a call after the show anyway, and he said he'd give me a call. I just wanted to keep informing him, because everybody likes to hear our Tommy, so you know, we know he's going, he's got his demo fever built up as he normally does. He's always excited and bubbly when he's going anywhere, like. So it's only right that I'll give him a quick mention that. So hopefully he'll try to join us, but if he can't, he'll call anybody that he needed to. So there you go. So just to give our listeners there, because people like to hear what Tommy's got to say. He's one of our young people in the English Defence League and does great things, great works. Yes, Kel, I was going to say then, if Tim and Michael are ready, maybe we'll play this for our listeners, what we was discussing probably about 15 minutes ago or so. So with that, Kel, I'll pass it back to you. So go ahead, Kel.
There's just a little bit of silence at the beginning, but it'll start up in.
Sing a song, Kel, while it comes on.
Na 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 na. Come on, play for mama.
The nightmare on Downing Street. The nightmare on Downing Street, my dear brothers, is when the door of 10 Downing Street is kicked down by one muwahid, and a khalif, he walks in and he establishes the Sharia. The nightmare on Downing Street, my dear brothers, is when one muwahid, he pulls a rope and he raises the banner of La ilaha illallah above Big Ben. The nightmare on Downing Street, my dear brothers, is when one muwahid, he flies with a helicopter all the way to the top of Big Ben, they remove all of those numbers and replace it with the Arabic numbers. That is the nightmare, my dear brothers. That is the nightmare of Downing Street. And as you all understand, we as Muslims, we are not those type of coconut, chocolate, moderate Muslims, the ones who bow their heads down to the government. Rather, we're the ones who want to, inshallah, work for the sake of Allah to establish the Ishar of Deen and make sure David Cameron comes on his hands and knees and gives us the jizya. Yeah, that's right. And that we cover up all of the women and put niqab on their face, including Queen Elizabeth and Kate Middleton as well. The whore, that's right. Fornicator.
I just love that guy.
Well, there you go.
Did he say he wanted to put Queen Elizabeth in a burqa?
Niqab.
Yeah. And he called my future queen a whore. Ain't happening. I'm so sorry. This is so offensive to me. I am loyal to my queen. I'm loyal to my sovereign. And I hear these Muslims spouting this, and it just makes my blood boil. Makes me so angry.
Yeah, you know, that's what I'll say. These people, they should be picked up by the scruff of their necks, put aboard a cargo plane, and dumped off in any one of these Islamic countries, and say, you will never, ever
be allowed to put foot back in this country. Don't even dream about it. You go and live in an Islamic country. We don't want you here. This will never be Islamic. You know, that's what I'd like to do to them.
That imam, where does he live? Where was he broadcasting from? Is he in the UK?
Yeah, I think it was in the UK, yeah.
So this piece of garbage is actually in the UK?
As far as I understand it, yeah. I mean, there is a serious point here, which is that not too long ago, people who stood up in public with views like that would have to take great care that they didn't fall foul of the laws on treason and sedition. And of course, when they don't really pose a serious threat, if they were only about 0.1% of the population and they decided they were going to go around saying stupid things like that, arguably people wouldn't take too much notice. But we're in a position now where the more that Muslims play up like that, the more we see that they do in fact pose a threat to national security. And I think we ought to be revisiting the laws on treason and sedition so that when people stand up and effectively encourage their colleagues to overthrow the elected government of the country, or to do unspeakable things with our monarch or the royal family, there should be a price to be paid. There should be consequences.
As Queen Victoria,
how about the gallows?
Or someone used to say,
gallows is good. I'm on board with the gallows. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, I'm serious. I think all Islamic fascists that espouse this, and they mean it. In other words, these people are serious. Of course, we can laugh, and he may seem like a clown and a buffoon, but he, as you said, Tim, he's not to be taken lightly. People that espouse this in America, in the UK, or any Western nation, they should be. Put on trial for treason, found guilty, convicted, and executed.
Well, quite. And I think the bringing back of hanging, drawing, and quartering wouldn't go amiss. to be quite honest.
You bloodthirsty thing, you.
Tim, we think alike. We're on the same page, brother.
Yeah.
We're on the same page, brother.
In fact, I'm sure it wasn't too long ago when boiling in oil was quite popular, and I think we could.
Oh my! We're going from one extreme to the next. Now we're talking about hand drawn quarter. Now we're talking boiling them in oil. Tim, you know, we're the EDL. We're against all forms of extremism. We mustn't put this message out.
Sorry about that. I forgot about that bit. I was in the EDL mission statement, and I couldn't find anything about boiling oil in there. And I'm sure I read it somewhere, but it must have been somewhere else.
Now, as I say, we say these things hypothetically. We've got to say it like that because we do know that people hang on every word and they can use things against us. So,
We place a very high value on freedom of speech in this country. And
yes, we do.
And, of course, people say, people even on the right say that freedom of speech does have its limits insofar as you can't walk into a crowded theatre and shout fire, for example. Now, that's the famous limitation that's often quoted when you're talking about freedom of speech, that people will say it's not an absolute freedom, but if it's likely to cause serious harm to people by shouting fire in a crowded theatre, that's a good reason for not allowing freedom of speech under those circumstances. But by and large, in a democratic society, freedom of speech is a treasured possession. So then we say, well, okay, if we're going to say freedom of speech is a treasured possession, which I believe it to be, then to how far do we extend it to our enemies? And we should extend it to the point where what they say has an equal amount of harm if it's disseminated publicly. So you're talking about incitement to overthrow the government, which in itself need to lead to civil disorder, shall we say, on a greater or lesser scale, and that should be something where freedom of speech is not extended to people who use it for those purposes. So, we could have a good argument about how much freedom of speech we should allow the enemies of our country, and I think that's one instance where we need to look at the laws of treason and sedition and invoke principles of national security in order to limit some of the things that these people do and say.
I think any person that speaks out and says things of this nature, or things that the imam said in Tennessee, any Muslim fascist that openly calls for overthrowing the constitutional laws of a sovereign nation, implementing the Sharia, subjecting political leaders or the Queen of England or any of the populace of that Western nation under the boot heel of Islam, needs to be dealt with lawfully, very harshly.
Are you still there?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Somebody. It sounded like somebody had hung up a telephone. I'm ever so sorry about that, Michael. Carry on.
Yeah, I mean, it's very serious business here. When these 7th century Muslims come and make these type of statements openly, the problem is that there's a lot of gutless, spineless, cowardly politicians that don't want to confront these people. There should be laws on the books. Look, if we went into the streets of London or the streets of a major city in New York and we espoused certain things that were similar but not based on Islamic ideology, it would be a problem, and you know, we could possibly face arrest and prosecution.
Yeah.
So the problem is there's a double standard that exists today in Western nations with a lot of these weak governments. So it's up to us, the people, to stand up and fight back. If they're not going to fight for us, then we're going to fight for ourselves.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I agree entirely that we are going to have to take a much stronger stance. And not just with what people say, but we're also going to have to take a much stronger stance against all aspects of Islam that impact on the public sphere. So we're not just talking about the words and deeds of individual Muslims who are addressing a group of his colleagues. If he's doing it within the confines of a mosque, for example, where we know imams routinely disseminate this kind of information, then there should be far-reaching consequences that go far beyond sanctions for that particular imam. You know, we should get into the realms of closing down structures such as mosques that allow this kind of message to be disseminated. Now, you do that half a dozen times, and Muslims are actually going to start taking notice, because they don't respect the weakness that we show. When we act as tolerantly as we do in our Western countries towards Muslims, they don't see it as tolerance. They see it as weakness, and they don't respect it. It's just the trigger for them to become more emboldened and get more and more outrageous in their words and deeds. And at some point in the very near future, I think there's a lot of mileage to be gained from doing something along the lines of what I've just said, which is not just taking individual Muslims who make these statements and applying sanctions, but closing down some mosques. There's another course of action which I was reading about today, where President Putin in Russia has just signed it into law, so I believe, that anybody who's found guilty of terrorist offences, that it's not just them that's going to be punished, it's going to be their entire family. They're going to be made damages.
Well,
they're going to be made damages.
That is the way, isn't it?
We need to send a strong message, certainly, and that seems to be a very good way of doing it.
Yeah, I agree. I can't say, I can't say anything against what he's saying, because that they know any of these terrorist people,
who's doing anything like that. It's not just them. They're not worried about themselves, but it's going to affect their families. So they're all going to be, you know, washed with the same brush, aren't they? If they, one of their family members gets caught doing anything or doing things dishes, whatever they do, that the whole of the family will pay the price for one of their family members. So,
well, I certainly think it would send a clear message, and what we need is much more deterrent, because at the moment, when it comes to manipulating human behaviour, people often refer to the carrot and the stick, and at the moment
yes.
we're giving them far too much carrot, and we're not giving them anywhere near enough stick, and I think it has to be...
Yeah.
The balance has to be substantially changed.
It's
a giant
club. I think that's something that we're all in the same mindset about that things. That's how things should be. But as I say, we haven't at this moment in time. We haven't got the people in politics who's got any sort of backbone or spine, and that is the problem. I mean. You know, they know they're going to become controversial if they start standing up and speaking out like what we do. But if they was to do it, and that was to do what Putin's done, then it sends a clear message that this will not be tolerated, and this is what's going to happen. And that's the only thing that they will take notice of. If you come down hard on them, that... just shuts them up then, and that is the best way.
Well,
people say, well, sometimes it can drive them underground. Well, let it drive them underground. Just keep a
yes.
close eye on them. At least they won't be spouting off their hatred all over the place and that, which they've been doing for such a long time, impediously getting away with it, haven't they? So,
well,
yeah,
well,
I think...
I mean, I don't buy the argument that if we crack down on them, they'll go underground, because at the moment, a lot of what is being planned and plotted and what they're conspiring to do is being done underground. I mean, they don't, if they're going to get on with a terror plot that maybe involves 3, 4, 5, 6 people, they're hardly going to sit in the local pub. Well, not that they would sit in the local pub anyway, but they're hardly going to sit in a public space and discuss it. It's going to be behind closed doors. As few people as possible are going to know. They're maybe going to be using a coded or encrypted emails or communications of some sort. And it's going to be it's going to be a task for the security services to try and keep on top of it. And already we are spending millions of pounds every week. I mean, I think even 2 years ago, they were talking about spending £2 million a week just keeping an eye on the people that they knew as potential troublemakers, if not actual
yeah.
potential terrorists.
Wasn't there,
now,
Tim,
I'll
if you don't mind me interjecting just
now.
For a second, wasn't
yep.
there a little while ago, one of the head of the MI6, I think it was MI6, actually said a statement that because of the situation, they've lost control of a lot of these people. They want to keep them on because it's become such a big job now that they are losing track. And that was going back quite a while ago. So that is the very worrying aspect, you know. And we do know these people, the MI5, MI6, and all the other covert, you know, operations that go undercover to catch these people out. You know, they do work tirelessly. We've often said that, you know. We appreciate their,
yes.
what they do for their country and their nation. But at the same time, it's a very worrying aspect to think that, you know, the head of the MI5 or MI6 actually said that they've lost track of it. And that, to me, was a very worrying sign.
Well, the thing about anything like this is the security services have to be lucky all the time, whereas the
yeah.
terrorists only have to be lucky once. And
that's
given
right.
given that you've got that's just the way that things like this develop. So it is almost inevitable that sooner or later there will be another atrocity.
That's that.
And
I agree with you, Tim. As I said, what we see with the atrocities on one of our London streets, and we often spoke about before what happened to poor Lee that time, we did used to speak about that one day people will see such a horrific crime, it will shake them to their fibres. We didn't expect it to be, poor Lee Rigby, but we knew that the way they do things, that it's going to be something that grabs the world's attention, and to do that in broad daylight, to actually butcher a young man, running the most cowardly act you could do, run a man down, right, a soldier, run him down, disable him, and then go about hatchet him to death. I mean, it was, such an inhuman thing that they'd done. But we know that these have got, they haven't got the same mindset of, civilized people. Their mindset is being controlled by that horrible book of theirs, the brainwashing, the conditioning that creates these monsters. That is it. And we often spoke about it. It creates monsters. That is why we say they need to revise that book. It doesn't matter what they say. It needs to be done. Because all the time they got verses like that that allows them that one of those guys actually said, "I've been told that I've got to do this." Or whatever he said, the way he said it, this is what's in the book, and I'm following.
I think you're referring to Michael Adela Bellagio, the one that was holding the cleaver and stood in front of the camera, and he quoted the verse of the sword 9:5 and 9:29, I believe. Which the media, to their everlasting shame, edited out of the broadcast when it went on to national news that evening. But nevertheless, it came to light that, in fact, he was quoting the Quran chapter and verse to justify what he did. And despite what David Cameron said about...
See, the media tried to cover it over, though, Tim. Need to be held accountable. The future, those people will be held accountable for not speaking at what really what was going on.
The individual, not only the individuals need to be held to account, but the ideology itself that inspires these things needs to be held to account. And that's what our politicians are at the moment. They are too afraid to do it. But if atrocities like this continue to happen, as I'm afraid they may well, we are all going to come face to face with the fact that action will need to be taken, and our politicians are going to be overtaken by events. It would be far better if they realised that what the EDL have been calling for the past 4 years is in fact a necessary thing for them to be doing if we're going to avoid civil war. But if they can't see it and act of their own accord, then I think events are going to overtake them. I think sooner or later something will happen which will oblige them to take the action that we have been calling for. I agree.
I just hope and pray that...
In a sane world, we wouldn't have to wait that long for these terrible things to happen before our politicians took action. It's as clear, all of us who are sitting around listening to this program tonight and discussing this topic know and understand what has to be done. Islam has to be brought under control in every Western country. We if we're not going to expel every Muslim outright, which I'm not saying we couldn't do that, but I don't believe it's necessarily the best course of action. Far better, in my view, to contain and control the Islamic ideology and make sure that every Muslim understands that there is a very high price to be paid for acting on what that ideology tells them to do. I mean, Putin is about punishing relatives. I've made the suggestion that if any mosque is implicated in a terrorist act, then that should be closed at the very least, perhaps razed to the ground with bulldozers the following day, and the land turned over to non-Muslims for worthy purposes, such as pig racing on Fridays. Oink! Oink,
oink.
Well, Tim.
You
Tim?
Have that a few times, and things might change. Yes, Michael.
Man, I'd like to respond to your statement. I'm not in 100% agreement. I'll tell you why.
Okay.
The teachings, the ways of Islamic fascism are really, at their core essence, evil. I mean, they are purely evil. I don't believe evil can be contained. I believe evil has to be utterly destroyed and vanquished. Yes. I don't think that it can be contained. Muslims will never acknowledge, first off, that there is probably even a problem within their Quran or their Islamic teachings, schools of jurisprudence, Sharia, whatnot. And the Quran, not a single syllable can ever be altered. We know that. The problem is that, what should be the correct course of action? If we say certain things, people might want to label us as extremists. But my question to those who would accuse us of being extremists is an extreme posture and position to oppose an ideology and group of people that wish to murder you, that wish to behead you in the streets of your hometown, that wish to enforce upon you a way of life that you have no interest in living. No, that's not extremism. That's called defending oneself, one's homeland, family,
and friends. Self-preservation.
Self-preservation. Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. I agree there. We
can't contain this evil. The ultimate end result will be, I don't think we know right here today as we sit and speak. But one thing's for sure, they do not want to coexist with us. They don't want peace with us. They want domination.
Yes, I agree. I was going to say, we're coming to the half hour, the last half hour of the show, but what I was going to do is going to, we can just take a little break, and then I think, Kel, I was wondering if you could maybe you could do just a little bit of a roll call for the show this evening. And then we'll continue for the next quarter of the show after we've had a break there, Tim and Michael. So once again, guys, it's also stimulating conversation that we have. Some of the topics, and I hope our listeners really been getting a teeth into what we've been discussing, because it's so important that we speak about these things, and that's what the East Anglian CDL Radio Show is for. Is so that we can put things out there for people want to listen to what's really going on, and that's what we do. So with that, I'm going to pass it back to Kel, and she's got something lined up. Well, I haven't heard this for a little while, so I've got to thank Kel once again for that that she's got lined up. So with that, Kel, back to you.
You bet, Jonathan. Thank you. And we're going to do roll call, and we're going to take a little bit of a break. And just to remind you, you are listening to the East Anglian EDL Radio Show, the official station for the East I always screw that one up, Jeff. For the English Defense League. And we are so grateful that you are listening to us. I just want to apprise you that your host is Jeff Mitchell, and I am sitting in for Tommy English, who is the co-host, and I only play Tommy English on the radio, but I'm actually Cal Fritzy of the Red Fox Blogger. We have with us, joining us in the chat tonight, we have our very own Tim Burton, and of course that is Cat Strangler 101, and we have Michael Green from across the pond. Joining us, and Michael Green, it's always an absolute delight to hear you. Always. In the chat room, we have British News, and of course that's our very own Army. We have Dodgy Dave, and we have Eric Kyle, and Eric is a sweetheart. We have EVF News Feed, and of course that's our Skid. We have some guests that have joined us. We have Golf Dogs of Kafiristan. Okay, I'm going to get that right.
Kafiristan,
I swear. I'm very grateful that Mike the Mechanic can also join the chat. We have Paul Alexander, and please check out his blog as well. Poppy is here with us, and Poppy is another tireless worker behind the scenes sometimes. Vito Esposito, as you say, Jeff.
Mamma mia.
Vito Esposito of the Radio Jihad Network is joining us as well. And we have Sue from New Mexico listening in on her device, her audio device. Jeff is so grateful that you all tune in and listen to this program. We are voices. We are the citizen journalists. We are where you can get the real deal, the raw truth, and the untruths, and that the MSM tries to spin on you. We dissect it right here on the East Anglians EDL radio show. Jeff, do you want to take a bit of a breaky then?
Yes, please, Kel. Thank you once again. I've got to thank all the our guests who supports the show, sitting in the chat room this evening. God bless you guys. Don't not forgetting all of our listening audience out there, wherever they might be, because we know we got people listening to us everywhere. Oh, it's a big old world.
Oh, you know what I forgot to do? I forgot to give myself a shameless plug. I'm Kel Fritzy of the Red Fox Blogger, and I have a show Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time with my fellow host Tim Burton, and on Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and tonight I will be taking on Exported Jihad. So please try to tune into my program as well.
There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, as I say, we've got some... The Blog Talk Radio is a great place. This is what we love it so much for, because we've got great people like Kel with her own shows. We've got people like Vito Esposito, Mamma Mia, No Sharia, the Radio Jihad Network, absolutely awesome, and many, many others that Grace is the Blog Talk Radio, great radio host, and that's what it's all about. But with that, I'm going to pass it back to Kel, and we're going to have a quick break, and then we'll continue with the rest of the show. So, Kel, take it away.
This is my United we stand.
Thank you once again, and also the roll call. As I say, we're coming down to the last quarter of the show, guys, so I'd like to let Tim and Michael continue with what they was discussing just before we went for the break. So welcome back, guys, and I'm going to pass it back to Tim. And I'm going to pass it back to you, Tim, and Michael, because you were discussing something just before we went for the break. So back to you then, Tim. Hello? Is he there? Are you there, Tim?
Yeah, sorry about that. I temporarily switched my microphone off while the music was on. So, yeah, all right. All right, Kel, all right. I'm just doing my 20 press-ups for you. Here we go. Oh, God.
Hey, Kel.
Oh, I don't want to do that too often.
You're going to have a field day with the blooper shows, aren't you, dear?
Anyway, just to recap... just to recap, I was making a couple of slightly flippant remarks before the break about how if Muslims were to continue with their treasonous and seditious actions, we should be taking slightly stronger measures, such as confiscating mosques, closing them, raising them to the ground, and turning them into much more worthy non-Muslim institutions, such as venues for pig racing on Friday afternoons. And Michael was making the point that we maybe ought to go a lot further, because you can't accommodate or appease evil. And that is a very good point. And I was just thinking over the break while we had the music, the extent, some of the things that we might contemplate that have been done in the past by other countries who have been faced by traumatic scenarios. I'm thinking of two in particular. One was Czechoslovakia shortly after World War II, when the Czechoslovak government decided that the Sudeten Germans that were living within their border had been a major cause of the war and the World War II, they expelled the entire Sudeten German population from Czechoslovakia. And at that time, that population was about, I think, somewhere between 20 and 25% of the total country, about 3 million people. And the point I'm making there is that logistically, it is perfectly possible to move large quantities of people out of your country if you deem them to be a sufficient national security threat. I mean, I'm saying, or rather my initial premise was that I didn't think we needed to go quite so far in in reducing the Islamic threat and the encroachment of Islamization in our country. Michael takes the opposite view in so far as he says, well, you can't live with evil, you can't appease it, you can only crush it and destroy it. And I'm thinking if we had to lean towards what Michael is suggesting, I'm just thinking what actions we might take. And the case of the Sudeten Germans being expelled from Czechoslovakia after World War II gives you an idea of one scenario. And anybody who says we can't expel maybe 3 million Muslims that are in our country because it's a huge logistical operation, I would beg to differ. I think it could be done.
Well, that's another example. People.
I'm not quite sure what the order of magnitude was there, but I'm thinking of large-scale population movements. I mean, the other example I was thinking of what might be done was also at the end of World War II, when the Japanese were defeated. The Allied forces that occupied Japan just after the Second World War took the decision that they were going to completely alter the character of the country by saying you can no longer practice. I mean, what they saw as the main cause of the Japanese people going to war in the first place was the militaristic aspect of the Shinto belief system that was prevalent amongst the Japanese. And what the Allies said was, as a religion, you can still practice Shinto in your own homes as a religious, purely religious practice, and we won't interfere with that. However, there will be no Shinto in the public sphere, will not be allowed in any way, shape or form. And the Japanese had no choice at that time but to go along with that. And now what we see in Japan,
they
still have their religion.
They have to go along with.
Yeah,
they
were defeated. They had to do pretty much what the Allies said after the bombs had been dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. They realised that they had completely and utterly lost. And that could say, I mean, a lot of people look at Hiroshima and Nagasaki and they say, well, that was U.S. terrorism. The U.S. is just so on and so on. But I would take the view that in doing what they probably shortened the war.
Or
yeah, if the Japanese had had their way,
they would have dropped it on
the
Americans, wouldn't they, Tim?
Exactly, and I think doing what they did, and this, I realise this is a controversial point, and somebody may take issue with me on it, but I think that the Americans actually shortened the war considerably by doing what they did, and even though the bombs cost hundreds of thousands of Japanese lives, it was still less life lost than would have been the case if the war had been allowed to continue.
Well, they did calculate it had been about... If the war would have continued, it would cost probably about another 1 to 2 million more of Americans would have died.
Into account. So what I'm saying is that there's me on the one hand who's I'm only slightly flippant when I say close down the mosques and turn them into venues for pig racing. I actually think if we did that a few times, you might see Muslim behaviour in this country changing. But if you take the view that the Islamic ideology is an evil that has to be totally crushed, and it may come to that, it may come to that, but if you were to take that view, then nobody should be under any illusion that we are certainly capable in logistical terms of doing one or both of those things, expelling the population as a whole, a big logistical operation, and not without its own risks, to be sure.
But we can do it. We can move lots of people, can't we? We've got the abilities to do it, and it could be done.
Yeah, and so I think due weight and consideration ought to be given to what Michael has said, in that we may get where we collectively decide that we can no longer live with an evil on the scale of the Islamic ideology, and that in this part of the world at least, we are going to take steps to make sure that it's thoroughly eradicated. And all I would say to the Muslims listening is that it could be done if the political will were there, logistically and in all other material aspects, it could actually be done.
Michael, would you like to come in on that?
Thank you very much. First, let me respond as an American to the issue of World War II. It was essential that the Japanese were brought to their knees and utterly defeated because of their fascism and fanaticism. As we know, they just did not want to surrender. So it would have cost a massive number of American lives in invading the mainland of Japan that was determined. So the atomic bomb was used. Now, interestingly, the first atomic bomb did not bring these people to their knees, and that's why the second one was dropped. So, it was a tragic loss of life, and there were civilians who died, but it wasn't terrorism, and people who say this about America are just ignorant, and they're stupid leftist morons.
It was war, and it shortened the war, Michael, didn't it? That's what it
absolutely
did.
You know, whether
people like
no one likes war. I mean, the people that like war the least are the people that bear the seen and unseen scars of battle, who've been on the battlefield. But as we all know, if it's going to come down to it, we're going to fight standing, and we're not going to submit. We're not bowing to Mecca. Never are we going to bow to Mecca. As Tim was saying, you know, it's a difficult situation because the leadership in Western nations, by and large, is very appeasing and capitulating and weak, gutless, cowardly individuals.
No,
but
don't
the populace
pull, don't
of
pull
nations,
your punches there, Michael.
No, I'm not going to. Thank you.
Sorry, Michael. Go on.
No problem. But, you know, what makes a nation great is not its political leadership, it's the people, and it's the traditions and values and the heritage of our respective nations. We are the ones and our forefathers who fought and bled and died and, you know, exist today to carry the banner, to carry the standard forward. If these Islamic fascists think that they're going to take over our nations without a fight, and I don't mean a fight over the radio airwaves, if it comes down to a fight, a real fight, then we will fight. And they need to know that.
That's what's most
important, is that we're not going to be cowed and intimidated. That's not happening under no circumstances.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we want
to
go
say,
to one of their
no
countries,
surrender. This is what
no, there's no surrender,
slogan
never,
always has
never.
Been. No surrender ever, you know.
Yeah, no, that absolutely. That's written in stone eternally. Yeah. If we wanted to enter one of their countries, and we wanted to bring our Judeo-Christian values and spread them in a Muslim country as these barbarians spread it in our nations, it wouldn't get an inch, let alone a mile. So we have no interest in tolerating them, because we know, Tim, we can't tolerate this. There's no tolerance of it. It's a zero-tolerance policy. That's the only way to deal with this. You know, the audacity and arrogance of these people to come into our country and try to demand special treatment, special laws, special accommodations, and they want the doors open so they can spread their Islam. And then they want the Islam to eventually overtake. They don't want to coexist. So they drew the line. They started the fight. They started the battle, and we'll continue the fight.
But what I was going to say, Michael, as I say, it's always I love listening to you. You talk about these things, and same with Tim. But as I say, we are sort of winding right down now. We've probably got about 5 or 6 minutes. But I've got to thank you both for being here tonight, being a great panel, as usual. And I've got to also thank Kel, a Red Fox blogger, who's got a show on later on this evening, guys. So you please stay tuned to Blog Talk Radio, because Kel will be on, and as she explained a little bit to you there further about the Sharia, she'll be discussing later on her show. But of course, and to everybody in the chat room, to all our great listening audience out there, we've got to thank you all for tuning in. We'll be back again, as I say, this Sunday. But as I say, I'm looking forward to next week as well. You know, I always enjoy the shows, but I'm looking forward to next Thursday's show, because you know, we're going to have Mr. Tim Ablett on the show, the chairman of the committee of the EDL. So, you know, so it should be a very interesting evening. So once again, thank you guys, everybody. As you all know, there was a slight blip at the beginning of the the episode, but Kel come through with flying colours. I hope there wasn't too much silence in the air. But these things happen. I mean, and you know, as I say, once we get things together, up and running, then away we go. Because we've always got a show. That's what I say, guys. We've always got a show, haven't we, Tim? That's it. You know, there's so many things, so
indeed.
Many aspects.
And nobody, I think nobody is expecting to see a radio show along the lines of BBC Panorama or something like that. We are going to get the occasional mishap, and everybody who's listening, I'm sure, understands and realises that. So when I take your names and tell you you've got to do 20 press-ups, I know I can't see. I know I can't see you doing them, but I know you're doing them.
How true, Tim. But Michael, once again, a great call. It's a great part of the panel, and Kel, once again, for all the work that you do as well. So thank you all, guys. But as I say to our listening audience out there, thank you so much, guys, for tuning in, week out, to the East Anglian's EDL radio show, the official English Defence League's radio station, and the official voice of the EDL. So that for myself, Jeff, a.k.a. No Surrender EDL, my co-host, Kel Fritzy tonight, Kel, Red Fox blogger, God bless you. And not forgetting Tim, who is my other co-host. And hopefully I get to talk to Tommy this Sunday, because I know he'll be on. He'll be doing a demonstration tomorrow. So all stay safe and well tomorrow at the demo. It's a regional one, and I hope it all goes well, guys. So we've said goodnight. Take care, stay safe, God bless you all. And not forgetting, for myself and the panel, all of us, no surrender, no surrender ever. And we are going, unless I can find it, where are we going?
I got it. We're going underground.
We're going underground. Thank
no
you.
Surrender ever, guys. No surrender ever.
No surrender ever.
No surrender ever. Ever.
You want more money, it costs a domain. as you ever hate me. I've been up already on my feet. People might need some tension to relax me. I'm too busy dodging through your fact. Here's what you get. You made your bed, you better lie in it. They choose your lead and the place you're trapped. And their lies will shut down and their promises run. You'll be killing machines with paper rockets and guns. And the public wants what the public gets. But I don't give a
yes, guys, we are once again into archives. Guys, I won't be spending too much time in the archives this evening because, as we know, Kel has a show to do in about an hour and a half, so give her time to prepare for a show.
Oh, that's okay. I'm good to go.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, you're going to be busy a bit later, but maybe we just have about a quarter of an hour tonight. And now, because I just feel a bit dry myself as well.
Yeah,
as
that's fair
enough. You can probably
enough.
Hear me voice, guys. I could, that little cough, that's because I'm dry.
Yeah,
it was a great show once again, guys. I've got to admit, so many things we cover when we do these shows, and you know, and that's the reason why people could listen because we do something different every time. You know, we have different aspects and that, and maybe we talk about demonstrate, but we always, you know, use something a little bit different, and we discussed that tonight as well. Because I was having a chat to Kel, wasn't I, Kel, about that video. She said, "Jeff, have you seen that?" And
mm-hmm.
I hadn't seen it. And you know, I was, and to think that David Cameron, this appeaser these people who are quite openly breeding sedition against our monarchy and against this great country of ours. And, you know, and he just pretends like it's not happening, even though he's had his life threatened himself. You know, he said that, you know, he had other people who said before, you know, that David Cameron would be on the hit list, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, it just goes to show you, he'd rather appease these people than actually deal with them, you know. That's the
mm-hmm.
problem. That's the
mm-hmm.
problem, isn't it, you know? If you command power like David Cameron does, you know, if someone said that, you know, any chance they could take me out or something like that, I'd want them taken off the streets. I want them done for, preaching about killing you or something. I think that's the law that says it. Someone said they want to kill you.
Yeah.
It's openly said it, so they should be prosecuted for it, shouldn't they?
Yeah,
hey,
indeed.
Jeff, you know what? David Cameron makes me want to say this.
Oh, son of a bitch, son of a bitch, gun. You thought I was going to say son of a bitch, didn't you?
That's an old American cartoon. That's is that Elmer Fudd
Porky
or
Pig.
Bird or?
Porky
oh, great,
Pig.
Good old Porky Pig. The Muslims will love Porky Pig.
Oh, he's a love Porky Pig. We all love Porky
we,
Pig.
We love Porky Pig here at the BBL radio show.
We do indeed.
Yes, we certainly do. But, yeah, but, oh, sorry about it, guys. My throat is so dry tonight. But it's been really a great show once again tonight, even though, as I say, and I know Kel was busy with she's got a machine that she puts the bleeper reels together. She's going to have fun and games with this one tonight, aren't you, Kel?
Yeah.
You better believe it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it was neat. I thought it was an interesting discussion, the way it was developing, especially in the last few minutes of the show. And I was especially interested in what Michael was saying, because he's absolutely right. And when you have evil on a scale that we haven't encountered in, say, 70 years, because the nearest equivalent thing that I'm thinking of, and maybe even that doesn't come close, is the Nazism, the rise of Nazism in 1930s Germany. And I say that doesn't come close because with Nazism, it was largely restricted to one country. You pretty much knew who the bad guys were because they wore these nice, smart uniforms. It was possible to identify them when it came to a shooting war. You could say, yeah, that guy with the funny helmet on, he's one of the bad guys, we'll shoot him. But you can't do that. That's why, even though the Islamic ideology has a lot of similarities to the Nazi ideology, in many ways it's like 10 times or 100 times worse, because it's not just in one country, it's pretty much in every country, every Western country where Muslims have a substantial population. You can't always tell by looking at somebody if they share that particular ideology, although a lot of them dress in Islamic garb. If it ever came to the point where dressing in Islamic garb would subject them immediately to sanctions, all they would need to do is just discard that clothing, I suppose. So they could blend. They could blend into the general population without too much trouble. So we have a much, much greater task on our hands in eradicating the ideology from our Western countries. Arguably a much greater task than we had trying to eradicate Nazism in the 1930s. It is undoubtedly the greatest evil of our time, without a doubt, and I'm talking about Islamic ideology. I'm not talking about radical Islam or fundamentalist Islam or Islamism. These are just convenient handles that well-intentioned people, non-Muslims, on the left in particular, they try and use these handles in order not to demonize what they see as the so-called moderate Muslims, who, after all, are going to ride to our rescue and be our friends forever once they have dealt with the Islamists in their midst. I don't really think that. It's just what they seem to think is going to happen. No, the problem is Islam itself. Islam is Islam, and that's it, as the Turkish premier said.
Islam is Islam. This cult called Islam, because that's what it is. And and people say, well, it's a religion. No, it's not. It's an ideology masquerading. This is what's been spoken about so many times before, but it is masquerading as a religion. That's why I look at it, and many others all look at it.
And it's something you have to you always have to emphasise whenever you're having a discussion like this with people who aren't as well informed as we are. One of the most important things is to explain to people that Islam should not be treated in the same way that we treat Judaism and Christianity and other religions, as essentially benign belief systems, because Islam is not an essentially benign belief system.
If you don't mind me just
What it's created is because they class themselves as a religion as such. They give a special status because of that reason.
Well,
you know, I had this conversation a little while ago where I put it out. This is my way of thinking. The way that they try to victimize ourselves, who's the EDL, and try to, you know, make, you know, say this and that about us. If we was to say, you know, we formed ourselves, the EDL, as a religion as such, we would also be given a sort of a status, a protected status, which it's just my way of thinking, you know, but as a religion, I mean, you've got Scientology that's created itself, you know, but it gives itself a special status, doesn't it? They
well,
look
indeed,
at you in a
indeed,
different way.
Indeed, yeah. I mean, I certainly, I mean, Scientology is a whole different ball game altogether, but I mean that's largely recognized as a cult rather than a religion by the public at large. And if we could just do the same with Islam, if we could say that Islam was first and foremost a political totalitarian ideology with religious overtones, because at the end of the day we have been sold a pup. Now, I don't know if that's the same term in the United States. They'd probably say we've been sold a bill of goods or something like that. But over here, we say we've been sold a pup. Muslims have said to us, Islam is a religion of peace. And when they were only 0.1 of 1% of the population, we thought, who are we to argue? We'll let them say whatever they want about their peaceful, tolerant religion, and we'll get on with it. But it's quite
it was
obvious.
About naivety, wasn't it? It was
people would
rather believe, oh, they keep saying it's peace, so it must be peace. And that is the message that they wanted to put in front about it, that they tried to play that along so long. And all of a sudden, people start to wise up, and now everybody, Islam now is under the spotlight. The whole world is alive.
Yes.
No, exactly.
People are
studying the Hadiths, the surahs, the Quran itself. I mean, young Tommy, he's always pulling out verses from the Quran. He studies and that. And that's all we say to everybody that's tuned into the radio show this evening or something like that, is to check it out yourselves, guys. What we say,
you don't have to take our word for it. All the evidence is there to be found. It's not hidden away. It's out in the open, and all you need to do is to go and research it. If anybody needs to know where to start, I would suggest go to CatStrangler101 on Twitter and follow the cat, because I post links there every day of the week to help
people. He certainly does. He's a busy man.
Understand Islam. A compelling wealth of evidence for us to be able to justifiably claim that first and foremost it is a political entity and not a religious entity. And if it were treated as such and everybody understood it as such, we would have a lot less trouble when it came to selling the solutions to dealing with that political entity. At the moment, when we say what we do and we propose what we do in order to deal with Islam, a lot of people are just who don't fully understand the situation are just holding their hands up in horror and saying, you can't do that with a peaceful and tolerant religion. What if somebody did it to Judaism or Christianity? But it doesn't bear that close a resemblance to Judaism or Christianity, but it bears a much closer resemblance to the National Socialism, the Nazism of the 1930s, which nobody had any problem back then classifying it as a political ideology. They recognized that it was certainly not a religion, even though there may have been some ritualistic aspects to National Socialism in the 1930s. People realized it wasn't a religion, it was a political ideology. And when the time came to go to war, as we were forced to in 1939, we didn't have the angst of having to say to ourselves, oh, but we're going to war with a religion, because we weren't. And I feel that if we could make that case and have Islam classified as a political ideology first and foremost, and there's every reason to do that. You've only got to look at the percentage of the text in the Quran and the Hadith that are devoted not to making Muslims better persons as individuals and showing them a way to enlightenment. The majority of the text actually tells Muslims how they must deal with non-Muslims, which makes it a political text and not a religious text. So that basis alone, the amount of text in the Quran and the Sunnah that has nothing to do with making Muslims into better people and everything to do with subjugating the non-Muslim and teaching Muslims that non-Muslims are worse than the lowest of animals, they're worse than apes and pigs, and so on and so on and so on, which is repeated throughout the Islamic texts ad nauseam. If we can convince or demonstrate that this effectively makes Islam a political organization or a political ideology rather than a religion, we'll have a lot of the hard work behind us if we can actually do that.
I think so. I was going to say, I'm going to start winding it down. I just, Michael, would you like to interject with...
I have a brief question. Yes. Islam is devoid of all humanity, and it's not a religion. I believe it was created by the devil. It was spawned out of the pit of hell, and it was foisted upon the world with the power of Satan. Now, with that said, I'm interested to know, in the UK, approximately how many years ago did these 7th century barbarians start coming in, and when did you see a spike in the numbers rise, and then, of course, bringing it to present day?
Well, if you're talking about recent history, I don't think we really started to see substantial numbers of Muslims coming into the UK before about the 1960s and 70s. And I think it was about that time that the unelected officials in the European Union, or what was then the EEC, before it was the European Union, decided that they were going to import a lot of people from North Africa and from the Middle East in order to Arabize or Arabicize, whatever the adjective is, to make the continent of Europe much more Arabic. The idea was to create almost like a new entity called Eurabia.
That's the word,
that,
isn't it?
Were they in a drunken stupor? What possessed them? Were they from a form of mental illness?
You might well argue that whatever the reason. Let's just say that they decided to do it for political reasons which were not in the best interests of the member states. Let's leave it at that, because otherwise we're going to be drifting off the topic, and I mean we could devote a whole other program to that. But having made that decision, they then set about inviting people from the Middle East and North Africa to come to Europe in vast numbers. And not only that, but they made over all the wealth, a substantial portion of the welfare benefits to them at the expense of the indigenous populations of Europe. So that when they came over, and this was especially true in the UK, I imagine it was as true in other countries, but they would come to the UK with their families, they would get welfare benefits that the indigenous Britons could only dream of, and people who'd been on in a queue, for example, over here, we used to have a system which allocated public housing, they used to call it council housing, in those days, maybe they still do, but we had a system whereby people who were deserving of it and couldn't afford places of their own to live were allocated public housing. And the system worked reasonably well, even though you might be on one of these council housing lists for some years. But when the influx of Muslims started, what a lot of people found was lists, although they'd been on a list, they were very quietly pushed right to the back of it to make for the Muslims and their large families coming in, who were obviously in greater need of housing than the indigenous people were, and that in itself caused a great deal of resentment when it started to happen. As to why it happened, well, the people, the governments who were in power at the time, obviously, this may not have been the sole reason, but one of the things that they obviously saw as attractive was the fact that if they were to invite in a lot of immigrants and give them a lot of welfare benefits, then those immigrants would be much more likely to vote for the people that were giving them the welfare benefits when election day came around. And this comes back to what I was talking about before, is that our parliamentary system of democracy, although it works well if everybody is broadly full of goodwill, when you start getting people manipulating it in that fashion in order to gain votes for themselves, then it becomes very difficult to roll back from that.
Well, I agree. Guys, I'm going to wrap it up now, but I was going to say, if we just have a... Kel, you've been sitting there patiently listening. Maybe your last thoughts just before we close the show up for the evening. So I'll pass it back to you, Kel.
I want to acknowledge a very, very important contributor to the program, and that is Martin Hive. And ladies and gentlemen, that's not his real name. So if you're going to Google Martin Hive, good luck with all that. But he put together a very wonderful video amongst many that Martin Hive does for the EDL radio program. And just when you're ready to close out, I think that it would be appropriate to play the demo for Exeter coming up on November 16th.
I think that would be absolutely... You're thinking ahead of me, Kel, because I was thinking something around about doing that. So... Yes, as I say, we got the demonstration, which is coming up very soon, ladies and gentlemen, and Martin has made this video. So, once again, Michael, Tim, thank you so much for a great panel tonight. Kel, what you did for stepping in, very short notice like you did, and I know you're panicking. I know you was, because I was. But God bless you, Kel.
It was my pleasure.
Thank you.
My
Thank
pleasure,
you for being
Ollie.
There and braving the day. And it's a really great great privilege to have you sort of on the team as well. So God bless you, Kel, for what you do. So with that, Michael, great to have you on the show again. And
yes,
great
indeed.
To have you part
yes.
of the panel and a part of our team. Tim, as usual, brilliant, mate. And well done today with what you did with the ABC, the TV network. Was it TV
yeah,
network?
Yeah, Tim, I want to have a conversation with you about that tomorrow.
Well,
yeah.
yes, indeed. I did send you a little link. I don't know if you've had a chance. Well, you probably won't have had a chance to have a look at it yet. But I did send you a little link relating to that shortly after
Thank
the interview. It was a most interesting interview with the young lady of ABC News America. How exactly she is going to use the interview, I don't know. I don't know if my words will be quoted verbatim or if it will be used against me. But the way I look at it is, any publicity is good publicity.
It's
there's
good
no
publicity.
Such there's no such
we've
thing
always
as bad
said
publicity.
That, yeah.
And
can you tell
we'll
me
have
that
to see.
Link?
I will if I can. Now, do I have your email in my Gmail? I'm not sure if I've got your. Email?
Can you send it to Facebook? Just copy and paste.
I don't know if I can, and the reason I don't know is because it's an attachment which is it was too big for Gmail, and what I had to do when I tried to send it to Jeff and to Kel on Gmail, Gmail said you can't do it in the normal way, you have to use Google Drive. Now I Well, I followed the instructions, and it uploaded the file I'd got to Google Drive, which was fine. And then it told me I had to share the Google Drive with the people I was sending it to, which was fine. And that all seemed to work. But I don't think I can just copy.
Oh, okay. I understand what you got to do.
It's a big file, and I would be more than happy to share the whole thing with you. And what I would really like for you to do, if you would, is send your email
address to me.
At catstrangler101@gmail.com. If you can send me an email to there, then I will copy you in on that link. It's about 48 minutes. It's quite interesting. The audio quality is not wonderful, but if things like that come up in the future, I'll try to take steps to make the audio quality better. But I will quite happily send you that if you just drop me your email address.
If you could put that in an MP3 format, that would be wonderful.
Because, as I say, I know you was a busy man earlier on today.
It's not a problem. I was just going to say, Kel just mentioned, could I put it in an MP3 format? I certainly can do.
MP3 you could do, yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, I mean, as it is, it's in what they call a WMA format, which is like Windows Media format, but I have the facility here to change it to MP3, and over
Brilliant.
The course 24 hours, I will resend it to you all as
Dad.
An MP3.
Brilliant. Tim,
okay.
Brilliant.
The audio quality is still not brilliant, but I think you'll get the gist of the interview if you listen to it. This is about 48 minutes.
Well done.
And
well
it was
done,
Jacqueline Jesko that interviewed you.
It was Jacqueline
Jesko was the interviewer. Hey, Tim?
Well, I don't know much about Jacqueline Jesko, but it sounds like you do. What can you tell me?
I do not know a whole lot about her, but I do know that she is quite the pinch hitter for ABC News, and for you to be interviewed by her is rather impressive.
Oh, well, okay.
You've made the big time, Tim.
She did say to me, she says, you don't sound at all like that guy on the Muslimic Reagan YouTube clip.
Oh, no, my goodness. Ted Condell?
There was a tune that was made, someone made a tune with this guy on it, but the thing about it made him a worldwide star, didn't it?
Even though
the lefties try to run him down with it and all that, what it's done is it put him in a superstar status. Everybody's listened to it around the world now.
If listening hasn't seen that, please Google Muslimic Reagan.
Yes, please do.
It might have something relating to the EDL in the title, I'm not sure, but you'll easily find it, and it's a young guy on an EDL show. He's clearly been at the old Loopy Juice, and he comes out with crackers. He really does. He's a
it was funny, but then again, he was there. And that's what we've got to say. Even though he knew he had to be there, it's so important that he's there for his country. His country needs him, and he was just there for that, even though he'd had a few too many. But anyway, Tim and Michael and Kel, thank you all so much tonight for everything he's done this evening. It's been absolutely great. Great show. I've enjoyed it. Well, I didn't enjoy trying to get in because it was a bloody nightmare, if you want my honest truth. But at least we have had a great show this evening, guys, and I hope our listeners have enjoyed the show and everything that we do, because it's our pleasure, isn't it, to bring these shows to our listeners out there. So with that, Kel, I'm going to pass it back to you. And we'll all say good night, take care, stay safe, God bless
everybody.
And we're going to say no surrender,
ever.
With that, Kel, I'll pass it over to you to make your last comment, and then
let's play us out with the Exeter demo from Mr. Martin Hive.
You've got it, Jeff. And first and foremost, it's always an absolute pleasure to be here and sit with you in the studio. I am always at your avails. If you need me, you know that.
Bless you.
I want to thank a lot of people out there that make this show the success that it is. Mm. And, of course, that is Michael Green and Tim Burton and Jeff Mitchell, Cal Fritzy, Tommy English, all these people that work so very, very hard behind the scenes. Sue
Not
from New Mexico,
our Ivan
Poppy
well.
From
Easy.
Scotland.
And Poppy.
And Ivan Humble. Ivan Humble
yeah,
is a definite mainstay on this program. Just to remind you, there is a demo coming up in Exeter. That is on November 16th. So please spread the word and get it out there. And, of course, I cannot say enough
Don't
about
forget,
this gentleman, Martin
We've got
Martin Hive.
There's a regional demo tomorrow in Shotton,
okay.
which is, I think, out in Lancashire, and it's a regional one. So for everybody that's going on that, stay safe. Go in as one, come out as one, and enjoy your day. You know, do what you plan to do, and have a safe journey there and back home. And with that, over to you, Kel, and we'll say good night to all of our listeners, didn't we? So, Kel, did you want to play us out for this?
I will.
Thank you.
And very good, Jeff. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, and also dress appropriately. We're looking at some rain. Well, it's England.
Yeah.
So dress appropriately. If you have any questions, go to your RO.
I was going to say, Kel, for all the gentlemen, because I think it might be a little bit chilly tomorrow, make sure that the ladies have knitted you a willy warmer, because it might...
Oh, Jeff, what you like.
I know.
What you like.
What you like. What you like.
Okay.
I couldn't resist it. I couldn't resist it.
Do get in touch with your RO if you have any questions. And now I'm trying to be serious again, and these guys are making me crack up. Okay. Like Jeff says, have a safe day tomorrow. Good luck at the demo, and go in as one and come out as one, as Jeff says. Just to remind you, of course, the Exeter demo, November 16th, and this is courtesy of Martin Hive. Jeff and Tim and Michael, you guys have a great weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday, right, Jeff?
Yep. See you soon, guys.
It's real straight up.
If you are sick and tired of the growing threat of Muslim terrorism, our government's lack of action about the burqa, money being diverted in the NHS to treat cases of female genital mutilation, the media's covering up of cases of Muslim paedophile gangs, and our politicians' cowardice, half-truths and lies about all of these things, then come and have your voice heard in Exeter on Saturday, the 16th of November. Defence League is not about race, and it never was. It is about making Britain's politicians listen to the people who live in this country, and that is why they have tried to silence us. No matter who you are or where you are from, you'll be made welcome. If you stand alone, you will be ignored. But together, we can make a difference.